Okay, so we have been talking about the sugya of Matzker and Socher, who we've called Joe and Bob for obvious reasons, which aren't all obvious, but those have been our characters. And we talked towards the end of yesterday, we talked about what seems to be the interim maskana in the Gemara, that, well, it all depends on the keys. The key issue is the keys. That if the keys were handed over before the 14th, so then the chiyuv is on Bob, is on the socher, the one who's living there. While if the, maybe in English we'll call the renter the one who's actually inhabiting, the owner is the one who's the other guy, the owner is the guy who owns all year round. So the chiyuv is on the renter if he got the keys before the 14th. But if we reach the 14th, and the keys are still in the hands of the owner, so then it's his obligation. So we saw that there was a significant discussion about why are keys so key? Why do they matter? Why are we focused on that? So Rashi's language was that that's the kenyan, and a lot of Rishonim, Tosis, and Eritzva, and the Magi Chalava, and the Ravid, and others, all argued on that based on Gemaras, that handing over keys is not a kinyan for karka, and therefore it's another factor. And the question is, what is that other factor? So we saw that there were a couple of possibilities. Either that basically this is in conjunction with the chazaka, so it's basically saying that this initiates the chazaka process, or initiates the kinyan more broadly, initiates the kinyan process, or it solidifies the kinyan process. So it's basically a kinyan kind of notion. Or is it about access? And like Tosfos highlights, that if you don't have access, how could you expect the other one who doesn't have access to do the bedikah? So like the Ritva has the language that it's also interesting in of itself. He says, since the Ritva says, since there's basically a svara for each one, it makes sense that the owner should do it, and it makes sense that the renter should do it. So, therefore, what's going to tilt the balance is going to be who has access. So, if access is the issue, so really after we stopped share yesterday, after we turned off the recording, some were discussing, Daniel was raising the issue, maybe a few others were discussing, what about if there are two keys? Or what about in a contemporary environment where very often it's a code and the original owner is certainly going to have access through the code? So it's not a question of just one or the other having access. It's very likely that as soon as the new guy, the renter, gets access, he'll be able to get in, but it's not going to change anything as far as the owner is concerned. So this is discussed a little bit in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. I should just note, first of all, I should note that not everyone agrees that it's not about Kenyan. Again, the language of Rashi was that it is about Kenyan, and Rav Soloveitchik in his Shiurim also discussed that it's possible that for the purposes of Schiris that a license to use something should count as a kinyan, and it should be looked differently than purchasing something. We saw that Maram Chalava specifically rejected that approach, but Rav Soloveitchik and his Shiurim did explore that as a viable approach. If you look in the Netziv, in his commentary, Merom Meisada, he also explains where there could be a kinyan here. But assuming like the many Rishonim that there isn't a kinyan, so these two factors it would seem to bring up the nafkamina of what happens if there's access to both of them, as is very likely to be the case. So this is discussed a little bit in the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch and Chok Yaakov and in the Prima Gadim. And as the Prima Gadim notes, that if he still has access, so then it would seem like there should be a obligation still on the maskir, and it all then is going to depend on other factors, on whether he makes it clear that he's not doing it. What if he's not in town to have access? That's going to be a relevant question. You know, one could also ask, maybe there is, this is not what they discussed specifically, but if we assume that access remaining for the owner makes a difference, what if the Messias is he's not going to come in because of the understanding of what rental means? And so what if you understand that when you rent the property from somebody, so it's yours for that time, and it would be an invasion of privacy for the owner to let himself in. So despite the fact that he could let himself in, but if the convention is that he's not going to be able to come in, maybe that should also make a difference. So that's also something to think about. But lemaisa, this is indeed discussed in the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, and it would seem to, as Danilo was saying yesterday, it would seem to be a nafka mina of what exactly is the focus on the keys. Okay, so we also discussed how the gather of Bayura Bayimate, how initially there were those who assumed that if the issue is Bayura Bayimate, so then, at least if we were talking about a din min haTorah here, before Rashi said that because of Bittul we're dealing with a derabbanan, but if we were dealing with a din min haTorah, so it would have been pashut one way, so which way? So the Rashash and others read Rashi to say that it's pashut on the owner, because it's his chamet. So he's the one who's at risk of being over by Yimatzeh. But the flow of the Gemara, as the Soloveitchik emphasized, suggested otherwise, that it would have been an obligation on the renter. And that needs to be figured out, because why would the renter be at risk of Bayura Bayimate on Chametz that is not his own? So yesterday we discussed that the Soloveitchik observed that there is, according to Rashi at least, a violation of Bayura Bayimatze by Chametz that belongs to another Jew. The whole question is the Chametz itself subject to Bayura Bayimatze? So if the Chametz belongs to a non-Jew, or the Chametz belongs to Hektish, so then there's no Bayura Bayimatze on the Chametz. So then, even if it's in a Jew's house, he's not going to be in violation. But if it belongs to another Jew, so therefore it's within the rubric of Bayura Bayimatze, so then the Jew who owns the house is also at risk of Bayura Bayimatze. And we noted there also the language of the Vilna Gaon, based on the Gemara and Bava Kamma, that it's an obligation on everyone, all Jews, to be Mevayer Chametz on Pesach, before Pesach, and therefore Bayura Bayimatze applies to them too. Okay, so far so good. Point you mentioned yesterday. So Rav Asher discusses this also in his essay in the Menchas Asher. And to build again on what we said yesterday, so he discusses how the gather of Bayura Bayimatze is not purely about ownership, and it's also not purely about owning the place either. It's not purely about the chametz being yours or about it being in a place that's yours. But rather, it's a different gather, a gather of matzui biyado, basically being available to you. And that could have, like we mentioned, that could have aspects l'kula, that chametz that is fully yours, but you have no access to, might not be subject to Bayura Bayimatze. But it could have implications l'chumra also. So what about chametz that you do have access to, but it's not yours? So here we're seeing that it seems like, at least according to Rashi, you could be in violation of Bayura Bayimatze. So perhaps the reasoning is, as Rav Asher explained, is that, do you want to explain it? Do you want to ask on it?
But I can wait till after you finish.
Okay. So as he explains that perhaps the issue is that when you rent something, so it is understood that you have access to the amenities and to the furnishings that are available to you, or it's often the case that that's understood. So if somebody rented you a house and he left some basic food items there, so it would be understood that the renter has the right to use them. So for that reason, Ba'ira Ba'imatze should apply also. Now, just to explain that a little bit further, Rav Asher doesn't spell this out specifically, but if you recall on day one, so we discussed that the Ran and maybe all the Rishonim understand that the issue of Ba'ira Ba'imatze, which is an issa d'oraisa, an issa from the Torah itself, but maybe it functions as kind of a siag. It functions as kind of a gedder. And if so, it's there to stop you from eating chametz. So if that's the case, so then what should it apply to? So that could explain these gedarim, that one, it has to be accessible to. So even if you own it and it's not accessible, then you're not going to necessarily be subject to Ba'ira Ba'imatze. But the flip side is that if it is accessible to you, even if you don't own it, it could still be subject to Ba'ira Ba'imatze. So if you have a context like this, where you're renting out someone's house, and the food isn't actually yours, but it's understood that you would be allowed to, at least under reasonable degrees, partake of it, so then maybe it's understandable that that should be how Ba'ira Ba'imatze should be defined. It shouldn't be defined based on pure ownership, but rather on access. So all of that would be consistent with that definition. I'll take those comments in a second. I'm sure there'll be a time throughout the year when Beis Hashem will discuss a topic that I find endlessly fascinating, and that's even on top of all the other fascinating things that we're talking about here. But the modern concept of Mechiras Chametz, it's a topic I always like talking about, even if we're not learning Pesachim, so I'm sure we'll find the time to talk about it. But to just emphasize one point of that discussion, that see, it's why when you sell your Chametz on Pesach, before Pesach, I think it's very crucial, and there are nafkaminas of this, that you have an attitude that's absolute about that, and that you understand the chametz to belong to the purchaser, and that you're not allowing yourself any indulgences unless you spell it out. Sometimes, like when we sell the chametz, you spell out, okay, I got dog food that I need to feed the dog, are you okay with that? So then he makes clear parameters what he allows. But one should never have the attitude of, well, it's probably moichel, I could do this, because that undermines the whole thing, as we'll explain in greater detail when we talk about it. But here you see, this is just a hint of that, that the same way Rav Asher is explaining, that if the assumption is that a renter is allowed to take from the owner's food, that could create an issur ba'ira ba'imatze, think theoretically it could do the same thing even if it's the chametz of a non-Jew. So that's something to, as a matter of practicality, is very, very much negei l'maisa, should be careful about in that context. Okay, yes, Daniil.
My question is going to be regarding that, regarding Mechiras Chametz. Because seemingly, according to Rav Asher, nowadays the practice of Mechiras Chametz will not be allowed.
I don't think...
Everybody has access to their food, even when they sell it.
Okay, this is a topic that I am very fascinated about, and would love to talk about for hours, so if I start it now, we won't get anywhere. But Blinetter, I promise you, we're not for another, that I guarantee you that over the course of the year, either in the context of Masechet Pesachim or in the context of Pesach itself, We'll talk about it in more detail. So there's a lot to say about the ins and outs of Mechiras Chametz. Fascinating, fascinating topic. For now, I would say that the Ikkar to remember is that it is allowed, but that the way we relate to it is crucially important. And that's the extent to which I will sign off to your point, and not to say that we shouldn't allow it, but that we should allow it with great care and a very specific frame of mind as far as what we're doing. Okay, so that's as far as that. There is also a discussion that some of the Achronim bring up that also could be practical. What if you're renting out the house on the 14th, but just for the 14th? Let's say you're traveling towards home for Pesach, so you're in a hotel, and then you're going to get home before Pesach actually starts. So this whole idea that you take on a certain status when you rent it for that day, on that day, but what if it's only for that day? Akiva?
Sorry, I have a question, but it's...
Is it a previous point?
No.
Okay, so let's just finish this point, then we'll come to it. So here, just it seems, as they point out in this farm, that the answer could be, if you were looking very carefully at the round answer to look at, so just around the two words in the round there, that he says you're renting it for the 14th and from then on, when we met him. So just a note, it seems to be that if theoretically one was renting a room, and again, there are situations where this could come up, somebody who's traveling on the way home for Pesach, someone's renting the room only for the 14th without intentions to be there for Pesach, so then this whole sugya wouldn't necessarily apply, even though the literal terms would have been satisfying. Okay, Akiva, did you want to ask your question?
Yeah, so when it comes to like the whole renting transaction, does it have to be, does the transaction have to be theorized before, like, from the 13th or before? Is the owner of the house over on Adum Bidika the night of the 14th? Assuming that there wasn't a renter yet.
You mean saying since the 14th started, so then that's what the Gemara says, it's his obligation to do it. And then the renter shows up on the 14th, but it was already the 14th having begun. So then the chiyuv is on the maskir. So that if the 14th started and the owner has it still, he hasn't rented it out, so then the chiyuv is on him.
Yeah, I think I had somewhere I was going with this.
We can come back to it because it probably will be brought up by other points. But on the surface, that seems to be the case. Daniel?
Regarding the case where you're just staying over for the 14th,
mm-hmm.
What's the problem, you know, that you'd be chayiv if you're not even going to be there for Pesach? There's no issue while you're in a bani matze. So is the Havamina that you would be responsible to do the other guy's bedika?
So, you know, it's always a question how much to spend on Havamina, because in general, it's a question when the Gemara has a Havamina and a Maskana, so you have to balance your time and how much time to spend on the Havaminas, because the answer could be, in a Hanami, that's why it's not the Maskana, the Havamina wasn't strong. So, you know, we still try to understand what the Havaminas might be, because there's always often a value in it, but sometimes you have to know when it's just that the Gemara is saying, well, it's not the conclusion because it's not a very logical Havamina. So here, it's not even a Havamina that's expressed in the Gemara, it's just one that the later Svarim ask, because it happens, and it's literally the application of the Gemara, so it kind of forces you to wonder, okay, what if I'm doing exactly what this discusses, but it happens to be that I'm not going to be there on Pesach. So to that, the response is that if you look at the Ram's language, it makes it clear that that's not the case that we're talking about. So the Hadmin is just that you are actually doing exactly what the Gemara talks about, but there happens to be a reason to think that it doesn't apply. So the Chiddush is that you can defy the literal words of the Gemara because your goal was different than what the scenario was envisioning. Okay, Ari, did you have a, yeah?
Yeah, I was going to ask like the opposite question, going with...
Contrarian.
I'm trying to understand the Ram. Like, if you're there on the night of the 14th, you could get Hamas is called. So, like, why, if you're going to be there just for the 14th, like, why should that make a difference? Shouldn't that, you know, decree of being to get Hamas still apply to you?
Well, if we're assuming that it connects to the reasoning somehow, so then there's room to say not. They're saying that if it was your house and you're leaving, so then, okay, we could say, but you own the chametz, and maybe your risk of ba'yura ba'yimase, just as much as you would be in other houses that you own that you never live in, but that you bring chametz in. But if we assume that you're A, not the owner of the actual chametz, and B, you're not going to be there to stumble over any chametz and eat it. So then it seems that you'd have to be very, very technically oriented to assume, like an ultra brisker thing, right? To say that the chaloitz chiyuv on the gavra that is doing the chaloitz renting of a chaloitz room has to look for the chaloitz that he may have left there when he didn't have any chaloitz there. So the whole thing is very, very ultra technical. Because Pashto says he should be off the hook from every angle. He doesn't own the chametz. He's not going to own the place on Pesach. He's not going to actually. So you have to really come from an ultra technical perspective to say that there should be a chiyuv. Let's see. Kiva?
Yeah, so does the mafia have a chiyuv to Zubidika before Pesach starts for someone renting out from him on the 14th? Because theoretically he's occupying the space. So he gave away the space for the 14th, so he can't do bedikah then.
So you're saying, in this case where the guy just rented out for that one day.
Yeah.
So basically you would have had the obligation of a masker, but the problem is there's a guy standing there who's getting in his way. So presumably you have to say a couple of possible scenarios. That what if you say that the situation like we have nowadays where there is dual access usually. So then presumably it's really his chiyuv. And he still has access, doesn't matter that the other guy is there. Right? Especially the language of the ritva that we noted before, that there's a svara for both of them, so we'll go who has access. So here he has access and the svara now is really only his court, so presumably he should do it anyway. Now it's going to be literally inaccessible to him. Then he should be chayiv to do it from before, the same way he would be chayiv to do bedikah in his own house if he was traveling away from his house. So he'd have to do bedikah earlier before he leaves. So just like he has to do it earlier because he's going to be in a different country when the time comes, so too if he's in the same place, but he knows he's going to be blocked off from his house, so then presumably he's chayiv to do it earlier. It's an interesting question. Like, let's say, for example, we can make other scenarios. Let's say the town is doing some mosquito control, and if they decide, sorry, we're taking over your house for a day, and we're going to defumigate it, and you have to go live somewhere else. And lucky you, your designated day is the 14th of Nisan, so we're not going to allow you any access to your house for 24 hours, beginning from Orla Arbasar till the Seder, and then after that, you can come back in. So then presumably, you'd have a chiyuv to do bedika before.
I don't know if it's too situational, but like, what about if saying the master didn't, like, assume nobody would be staying?
He got surprised.
Yeah.
All right, so now that question, I'd ask you to save until next week, because when we get into Bittel, so we'll see that there is a possibility, without saying too much now, that Bittul and Bedika are two halves of the same coin. And the key question is it something that's shaykh for you to find and get rid of or not? And that the chametz that you are able to look for and destroy, that's where we have an obligation of Bedika and Beer. And the chametz said, you know, so that's where Bittul comes in. So it could be it moves from column A to column B. And as you guys mentioned last year, so many of you got put in that position, right? If you got quarantined or kicked out of yeshiva, as it happened last year in between Purim and Pesach, so probably were a lot of people in that position that thought they would be able to do Bezikas Chametz and ended up separated from where their Chametz was. So then that could be room more for Bittul. Could be that Mechiras Chametz has a role there also, but that's a story we'll get to. Okay, so in the interest of time, let's call your attention to another point, which we'll fill in later when the sugya makes it more relevant. Barasavetchik and his shiurim, so he also did discuss the possibility that what this Gemara is focusing on is not necessarily Ba'ira, Ba'imate, or Achila, but a chiyuv of Tashbisu, who is the chiyuv of Tashbisu on. And that's going to revolve around the question that hopefully we'll explore in more depth sooner rather than later, the question of whether Bayura and Bayimatze on the one hand and Tashbisu on the other hand are linked, and are they opposing and matched concepts, or are they separate concepts? Because if they are linked, so then it's hard to imagine we could place them on different people. That presumably whoever it is who has the obligation of Tashbisu, he's the one who has the obligation of Tzedikas Chametz and Bir Chametz. And the notion that we could have any suffix of whose mitzvah it is, if indeed it all connects back to Tashbisu, that becomes a more difficult possibility to sustain. And that's something that we will have to look at too. Okay. So just to move a little further, so the Gemara goes on to talk about whether the renter can assume that the house has been checked or not. Does it have a chazaka of being baduk? So the Gemara says, well, what's the problem? Just ask the guy. Ask the owner if it's baduk or not. And then the Gemara says, well, he's not around to ask. He skipped town. He's not around for you to ask. So we need to know, is it B'chezkas Baduk or not? So what's the maskana there? So a number of the Rishonim understand that what would happen, practically speaking, if he is available. It's once the Gemara concluded that it is the Chezkas Baduk for a combination of reasons. Let's say what the Gemara has on Amud Beis, that Hakol Chaverim Ekel Eitzel B'dikas Chametz, that we have the right to assume that people, Chaverim here in this case refers not just to friends, that's a good thing too, but to a different definition. Hakol Chaverim means the social network. The network of chaverim, the people who take these dinim seriously. So, like we find by Zroim, by Trumas and Maitris. So, if somebody is assumed to have done Bedikas Chametz, so you could say that that's the chazaka, that the house does have a Bedika done. And the Sfarim explained that that's presumably Midin Rov. That's what you call. Maybe we discussed those of you with us last year and we saw the first Parak HaChulin. This is a major sugya in the first Parak HaChulin. The idea of a Ruba Delesa Kamon, basically a rov that's based on what people generally do, which default the case. So most people will have done Bedikas Chametz, and therefore you can say that the Chazaka is that it is checked. So if that's the case, so what if the guy is there? The guy is accessible. He left you his cell phone number. So do you have to ask? What do you think?
And it's a question of lechatchila b'dieved, no. And so it's...
So what would you do with that? What does that mean practically?
Then it's that question, I guess. But it has to be, in like, when we felt like, could we go lekula on this and just go with the chazaka? Saying like, yes, it's a b'dicha derabana, if it's b'dicha derabana, could we go lekula on this and just rely on the chazaka?
Okay, so that seems to make sense. Lemaisa was the Machlokas Rishonim. I can see some of the Rishonim, the Ran discusses this, and the Ritva discusses this, Tosus also discusses a little bit, that you do have to ask, according to them. Because when we're dealing with a notion of a chazaka, so a chazaka is something we rely on when we don't know, we don't have a way to know. But if we're able to be Mavar, so then we'd always prefer just being Mavar. We would always rather, and I don't know if this is what you were getting to when you said about L'Chadchila and B'diavad, but that L'Chadchila, we always want to work off better information. So if we have the ability to ask, so we'd rather ask. And that maybe the Gemara only means that he's not around to ask, okay, so you don't have the ability to ask, so then you can rely on the chazaka. So a number of Rishonim, such as the Ran and others, see it that way, that there is an obligation still to ask. And the Bach questions this. He says that, no, but still, maybe that's the F before the Gemara told you it was the chazaka. Right? The Ran's basically reading it that the Gemara is saying, ideally, you should ask him. But if you can't ask him, so then you can rely on the chazaka. And why should that be true, that ideally you should ask him? Because whenever you can be mevar, you should be mevar. So the Bach asks, but how do you know that's the conclusion? Well, maybe the conclusion of the Gemara is that the Gemara wants to know, is there a chazaka or not? And then, so somebody in the base medrash says, well, hold on a second, why are you bothering me with this? It has no nafkamina, just ask the guy. And then the response to him was, no, let's just theoretically say he's not there to ask. Okay, so is there a chazaka? And then the answer was, yes, there's a chazaka. So if there's a chazaka, so then all right, then I don't even have to ask. Now, it came up in the context of why the question was necessary, but once you have that answer, maybe it's so good, maybe you don't even have to ask after, even when asking is possible. So this is a machlokas in general. There's a whole back and forth, and there's more to say about this. It gets into some of the whole discussion here. And this view that many of the Rishonim have, it's interesting why their assumption is that you should ask even with a chazaka. Tosus on Amid Beis, Tosus raises the point, and this is also just fascinating in general because it goes to, we've mentioned earlier, and what we'll see really throughout this parak, when we talked about when you have a chashash rabbanim and when you don't, and how you weigh various factors. So here too, so the question of when do you have credibility and when do you have reliability? So sometimes they're very subtle distinctions. So Tosus raises the distinction that if somebody sends you food, you have the right to assume that they've taken off maisrus, it's not tevel. So why shouldn't you stay here also? So Postus makes a distinction, which seems a little bit subjective, that maybe it's not comparable that when somebody sends you food, they don't want to be machshul you, so we have a right to assume that they took trumas and maisrus. But when they give you a house that they haven't done B'dikas Chafitz on, it's not such a clear michshol. And therefore, we don't have the same level of reliability. And the Beis Yosef brings up that maybe there's a difference between B'dikas Chametz and an animal that's shechted, and you want to know if it's a treifa or not. Even though And it brings up a couple of interesting questions in that comparison. But the assumption that we're going to be more machmir by Bedikas Chametz and say that if the person is there, you should ask. So the Beis Yosef says that the chazaka is not so strong. He doesn't spell this out totally. But in the animals, so you have a chazaka that the animal is not a treifa. Because the animal lived until you shechted it. So as far as we know, it's not a treifa. But the house, it was the chazkas not checked. The house, the average house, the presumption is that chametz has been brought into the house and nothing's been done about it. So the chazaka meikara is that it hasn't been checked. So the effectiveness of this chazaka, this Ruba Delesta command, that most people will check their houses before Pesach, has to work against a chazaka meikara, that we know that that's changing a previous reality. So that's got a bigger hill to climb. So for that reason, perhaps we should be more machmir when dealing with Bedikas Chametz, that if it's possible to be Mevarer further, we should be Mevarer further. Now, at the end of the day, so what about what Akiva said? It's still okay, you're dealing with the Rabbanim here, and we don't know, so you can say, Safek the Rabbanim Makula. So, here, this is discussed, and there's a long tshuva about this in the tshuva called Aryeh. If you want to take a look, we can send it to you. He has a very involved approach. And it brings up the question, which maybe we'll also come back to, about if you have a din d'rabbanan of Bedikas Chametz, but the din d'rabbanan is rooted in a concern min haTorah, like if it's rooted in the concern that you'll violate either an issur d'oraisa by rab by imatzeh, or worse, of actually eating chametz. So to what extent is that subject to a lenient approach of Safek D'Rabbanan L'Kula? Or do we say that, no, we should be more machmir because it's rooted in the Din Minat Torah? So that's also an open question. Now here, you could also note the Magid Mishnah. Do you have a question?
In general, I'm just confused why in this case we say that the bureau is asking the owner, and why not going and searching the house in the first place? Why is that not the way that we could possibly check to make sure that Chazaka stands?
That's an interesting question to bring up, because if you're going to say that, you have to think of it, because clearly there is a difference as far as Tircha is concerned between asking him and checking the house. So you always could search the house. So to say that you have to search the house, so then there's no value to the chazaka at all. Right? You're not acknowledging it to be worth anything, because there's nothing more machmir than that. Right? So to say the chazaka has any value, it has to at least be from saving you from doing a full bedika, otherwise there's nothing to it.
Well, wouldn't asking him be relying on the same chazaka, that he's trustworthy in this manner?
No, because it's not to the same degree, even though it's still kind of subtle and subjective. Because that goes to the question of, is he honest about what he says? But the chazaka that we would otherwise be relying on is not just his basic honesty, but his responsibility as far as these things. And his responsibility is a very broad spectrum of things, because there are people who just won't take care of their responsibilities at all. And there are people who will take care of them, but won't get to them the first minute. So if you're asking at any point of time earlier in the framework, maybe there's no reason to assume he did it. So it's a lot of credibility given to somebody to say that we trust you to carry out your responsibilities and to carry them out expeditiously at the earliest possible time.
So then the follow-up question is this being the case that we have to be Mevarer, so why, once the owner is not there, do we say you don't have to be Mevarer if you still could be through checking? Why all of a sudden do we get rid of that obligation?
So it seems like the notion is that this is your personal intellectual honesty responsibility. And I think it's actually a very interesting question, and I guess you probably will have to carry this over to Sunday. So it's turning out we'll have a lot to do on Sunday. We'll have to try to get as much of it because there's still some other points we want to get to. But I think the question that you're raising is how much of this goes to the actual din itself and how much of it basically you might call a din in the gabra, which is something I think there are other elements here to explore. That basically the requirement to be mevarer is a requirement of a matter of your personal intellectual honesty, your personal responsibility. And that it's going to require much more of an explanation to say what I'm getting at. So I think maybe we'll have to leave that as a cliffhanger for next time, because I think that may get into some fundamental dinam d'oraisa, dinam d'rabbanan questions. So I guess we'll have to pick up from that, and then we'll have to do the whole mekach tos discussion on Sunday. So there's a lot on our plate, and we'll have to cover it all, but it's all Baruch Hashem fascinating stuff. Let's just recap what we spoke about, and then we will set the stage for next time. So we talked about the question of the significance of Mesiras Maftechos, why is that so important, and how that seems to yield an afkamina, what if there's access to both of them, and some of the ramifications of that. Then we talked about the question of why the standard for Bali Rav Ahi Matzeh should be Matzli V'yarcha, not totally based on ownership of the Chametz or ownership of the residents, but something in the middle that focuses on access. And we talked about implications of the Kula and the Chumrah of that, and also it may have implications for Mechiras Chametz in very serious practical ways. Then we talked about the also somewhat practical question of what if the rental of the room is only for the 14th and not for Pesach, and how the language of the Ran makes it clear that it's assuming that you're going to be there for Pesach also. Then we talked a little bit about the Rav's observation that the sugya could be about Teshbisu, and that's something we're going to have to explore a little bit further. And now we just got into the question of that the Gemara's conclusion that you have a chazaka that the house that you don't know about for sure one way or another does have the Dikas Chametz done to it. But what if it's possible for you to ask? And we saw that many of the Rishonim said you do have to ask, but it's an obligation still to be Mevar. The Bach questioned that, and we saw various chilukim that have been suggested between this and other dinin. Tosus bringing up just the level of putting others at spiritual risk that would be involved and how that plays in. The Beis Yosef brought up the question of are you going against the chazaka of the previous reality. And some of those elements, and we just now got to this question of if you do, that Daniel is bringing forth now, that if you do have to ask them, what does that say about the whole chazaka? And I think there is approach to that which opens up much larger issues, so we're going to pick up with that next time. So we'll wish you a wonderful afternoon. Should stay safe and healthy. And God willing, I will see you all at 9 o'clock tomorrow. It should be should be only good things.
Ready?
Yes, sir.
So I'm not going to be able to be at Shira.
One second, let me just turn off the recording. Okay.